Hi, welcome to Soul Centered. This is Baruch Halevi. I am here with Ariella. Hi, Ariella.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. We're actually not in the same place. We are husband and wife, and we live together. But right now, during crazy COVID and the upside down world we live in, we're in our two different offices. And so we're coming to you together on this podcast from two different places. There might be a few technical issues, but I think we're good. We are excited that you are here with us at Soul Centered. For those of you who don't know, Soul Centered is a center for spirituality, meaning, and healing. Specifically, we meet people in what Carl Jung called the afternoon of life. Afternoon of life, we call it 40s and onward, is a time that can be filled with purpose and passion. We empower the clients that we work with to live the life that they were put here to live. But in order to do that, you have to have new goals, new rules, and new tools. As Jung talks about, what got you here won't get you there. The morning of life and the rules and the tools that we use cannot and should not be replicated in the afternoon, because if you try to live in the afternoon like you did in the morning, you can do great damage. And so Ariella and I work with clients in guiding them through to and through the afternoon of life.
Right. And so last week when we did our podcast, we really talked a lot about the morning of life. And then, so a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the morning in life, and we've talked about the afternoon of life. And the morning in life and the afternoon are completely different. But as B said, we have to get to the afternoon by going through the morning, right? You don't know what you don't know until you wake up and realize that you were living in morning rules. So we talked a lot about morning rules, goals, and tools, and how they affect our soul, and how we forget, or we've all forgotten, that we are a soul, a spiritual being having a physical experience. And the afternoon is about really waking to that. So today we're going to talk about remembering yourself and returning to your soul and recommitting to your soul. So it's, again, this idea of the morning of life is really about forgetting. We know who we are on the inside. We know when we are quiet and get still, we know who we are. We know what our soul needs. But the morning of life is all about achieving, and it, you know, life is full of chaos and complexities. And the universe always has our back, though. So if you think about this, and this is what we're going to be talking about, in the morning of life, really, there are whisperings of who we are. I think about the morning of life, and I think about the camping trips I used to take with my dad, and the mountains and the fresh air smell and all the music that was played. And that was a whispering of my soul. And so there's just little inklings, little whisperings here and there of who you are, but we don't really come to fruition with that. Some of us do, we wake up early, but until the afternoon of life, when we have the opportunity to discover our purpose and unleash our authentic power. So it really begins with remembering and recommitting and really returning to our souls.
Yeah, but don't you think before we get in too deep into remembering, we have to unpack a little bit more the forgetting? Because I know, you know, when I'm working with clients, there's this level of shame, remorse for having forgotten who they are. And, you know, one of the things I always do is remind them that that was an important process. It's there by design, right? If you believe in soul, if you believe in source, if you believe in this, that there's a method to the madness of this thing called life, then there must be a reason for forgetting. Don't you agree with that?
I agree. And I also think it's a choice. We're human beings here with a free choice, right? We have free will to go and figure out who we are. And of course, we figure out who we are deeper in the afternoon of life, but it's in relation to who we were in the morning.
Yeah, you know, I'm reminded of that ancient Kabbalistic tale about, and I've shared this before in different formats, but it's such an important tale. I think that's why it's endured the test of time, about that little dent on your lip. How we got that dent on your lip? I can never remember the stupid name of that dent on your lip. It doesn't matter.
I don't remember it.
An angel comes to every soul before they're born, because a soul knows everything it needs, everything it is, everything it was, everything it will be by definition, right? It's part of the divine. But if it shows up as a soul, all-knowing soul, then what's the point? What's the point of being here? There's nothing to learn. There's no growth. And so as an act of kindness, this angel touches the lip of the baby, which is where you get the dent from. And in that moment, it's an act of grace that all the knowing goes away and the baby is born fresh. But it doesn't all go away. It just goes inward. It goes deeper. It gets buried. And the journey of that baby's lifetime, your lifetime, my lifetime, is to remember everything you've forgotten.
Exactly. And again, it is about free will. We are here on this planet as human beings, connected to our soul and connected to the divine, but we have a choice as human beings to continue to forget or to wake up and remember. Some of us are kind of kicked out of our forgetting by traumatic events, but it is an act of choice if we choose to remember. And it is almost, I don't want to say a curse, but it is kind of this curse if we went through life already knowing who we were, then what is the point of going through this physical life? We might as well be in the next world.
And so on that journey of trying to remember, and you know, your average 20-year-old is not trying to remember, but they are, and their soul's always calling out to them. And there's this energy that drives us in the morning of life. We think it's us, you know, in our arrogant, we think we're the creator. We think we're the source. That's part of the deal. And so you're out in the world and you're trying on new things, but really in many ways, it's like you're looking for the missing piece. Remember that book, The Missing Piece?
Somebody
gave it to us for our
wedding.
A wedding, right, by Shel Silverstein, and this little piece of a wheel of a circle trying to find itself. But we're out there looking, trying to find ourselves out in the world, and we put on masks, trying on different masks, right, over and over again. And this is part of the act of trying to remember whether we're doing it consciously or not.
Right. And I think what you're saying is that we you know, we try on all these different masks. I think of the Jewish holiday called Purim. And Purim is all about wearing a mask. It's
all about
like you're
getting drunk. It's all about getting drunk, no?
Okay, fine. But it is also about wearing a mask. And what happens to you when you choose, like we consciously are allowed on Purim to wear these masks, to try on a different persona. But really the spiritual message is that we wear masks most of our life. I think of the mask or the identity of the good girl or the bad boy, you know, and like you go through your life. I remember all of these masks that I tried on, different identities, different people, different, like I decided I was going to be in a different family for a while when I was a teenager. And I was going to try on the mask of trying to fit into these like family friends that I had because I decided that my family was too broken. And so it was just a matter, it's like trying on shoes that don't fit, that are too small for you.
So, you know, in Jungian psychology, the word for mask is persona. And that's where we get this idea of personality. Your personality is a mask. So oftentimes, I work a lot with the Enneagram, which is kind of this ancient blueprint for who you really are beneath the masks, because we start believing we're that personality. That's who I am, as opposed to that's how I show up or don't show up. But that personality, and one of the things, you know, we both work on our personal lives and with our clients, is to help people distinguish between their soul and their persona, their mask.
Right. And so what happens is, eventually when you hit the afternoon of life, Brené Brown, you know, talks about this so beautifully in her article, The Midlife, Unraveling. Thank you. I was going to say awakening. The Midlife Unraveling is that, you know, slowly as you head into midlife or probably years before, you do hear this gentle whispering, a tap on your shoulder that's saying, you know, wake up, take off your mask. And typically we ignore it because we're having, you know, too much fun being unconscious or trying on all these masks. It's part of the mourning of life. Eventually, though, what happens as we head into or screech into the afternoon of life is that, you know, the universe gets louder and the tapping gets more intense. And we are really being asked to form new rules, new tools, and new goals in the afternoon of life. Those masks, they aren't where you're going. It is time to wake up to a new idea of who you are.
Maybe we'll talk about it next week, but you know, sometimes the universe whispers and sometimes it shatters. Kabbalistic idea of shattering, and you know, you're not given a choice. The masks are ripped off of you, or they're slowly pulled off of you. If you define yourself by your outward beauty, your looks, time will take its toll and it will remove your masks. The biggest challenge I find in my own life and guiding others is you don't always know what your mask is. If you wear it for long enough, back to the persona, the personality, you believe it's who you are. And, you know, I don't believe in idolatry as bowing down to totem poles. I do believe in idolatry as believing that we are static. We are stuck. This is who I am. I'm an angry person. That's who I am. No, that's how I'm showing up. That's a persona. That's a mask. But is it who you are?
That's very true. And I think about this idea of midlife, you know, and asking yourself, is this who I am or is this how I feel? You know, if I've carried the heaviness of anger and unforgiveness for my entire life, well, it's not who you are, but it's what you've become. It's the mask you're wearing. So when we think of this afternoon of life and this awakening, like B said, sometimes it's a slamming into a midlife crisis, if you will, a midlife unraveling. Sometimes you are shattered. I know that my mom was sick with cancer for about 6 years, and that started my midlife unraveling. And it, you know, also took place when we lived in Israel for 3 more years, and that just added on to my unraveling. And then I think something that finally, like coffin, you know, nail in the coffin was our son going to a boarding school to live to get some help for some of the issues he had. And that was just like the final straw. So I heard the whisperings and I said, I'm ready to remember, right? I'm ready to remember who I am. I can see that the world around me is falling apart. So you can take COVID or you can take any shattering that you've had in your life, death, loss, illness, or just an awakening. And it is time to remember. I think that's one of the key things to go into and talk about when we're starting to awaken to these new rules.
So we have 3 R's to help us guide us on the rest of the podcast journey together. Remembering, returning, and recommitting. I actually like a lot of alliteration, so I'm a little, sometimes I overdo it, but I think you limited us to 3, which was a good call. Remembering is the first step in it, and it's a process in many ways that can only happen in the afternoon because of last week's rules. If you look at the rules last week, they're there to keep you in motion, to keep you busy, to keep you trying on. That's just how the morning is built, and so more is better, and that's who we are. And in the afternoon, outside of us and inside of us, things are changing. Things are slowing down. In our Western American society, we can look at it as a negative, right? But it's not a negative if you're willing to use the time in a different way and listen to the opportunity that comes with that slowing down as an opening to remember.
I really think remembering is like a waiting period. Right? We have this awakening. We start to remember and we start to see the world with new glasses, right? We've been wearing these glasses called the rules of the morning of life. And we begin to awaken to see what's on the other side. And what happens is that suddenly our relationships may feel stifling or we feel suffocated in the identity, the mask that we're wearing. Everything, the earth begins to shift underneath us. And we begin to see that all those things that we stored inside of our mask and our identity starts to come unleashed. I really see it almost as an earthquake inside of us. And what happens is that we become this cocoon, right? It's really kind of messy because we're used to doing things really fast and furious and getting those action-oriented goals done with. This is not about taking action. This is about going into this darker cocoon to become that butterfly in the midlife of in the midlife. But it's a great pause. Don't you agree?
Well, I don't doubt it for a second. The challenge is to honor the afternoon rhythms and rules, because we're built for the morning. You know, we've just gone through the morning. Nobody's taught us this. Most of my clients just need me to help them stop. And I don't just mean taking a pause. I mean stop. Stop the doing. I'll deal with clients all the time who want to apply the doing to the being. So like, what can I do to be? What can I do more to meditate? What can I do more to find my soul? It's so confused, understandably, because we just don't have a vocabulary or tools or idea of how to truly cocoon.
Right, right. And I think something that I, you know, Bea and I work sometimes with clients together, sometimes separately. We come at things differently, but we always meet in the soul. And the way that I see, you know, the personally and professionally, the way I see it is that there's so many levels of cocooning, if you will. And one level is to work with somebody or to realize that you need to stop. And the next layer or level would be this idea of when you close your eyes, you see the world that is not the physical world. And this is kind of where I come in terms of spirituality and healing. We close our eyes so we can get out of our heads and our minds and get more into our bodies and spirit and dive deeper into, you know, what cords, energetic cords and real cords and emotional cords do I need to break in order to cocoon and grow in the afternoon of life? How can I remember? Well, first of all, we have to kind of clear it. We have to clear it energetically and then move forward.
Can I just add, because I deal with this all the time where, you know, you say spirit and you say divine, and I run into people so often who think that means, okay, I'm going to come and hang with B for an hour and we're going to breathe and we're going to talk about sweet nothings. And I say bullshit, right? This is going to kick your ass in many ways, because the cocoon is dark and it's foreign and it's mushy and it's fragile. And if you don't want to deal with those things, I would say that's not spiritual. Spirituality is the uplift, but it is the down stuff too.
I totally agree. You know, part of the work that I do with somebody is not to just hand you, you know, beautiful, fluffy spiritual things. Part of the work both of us do in different ways is emotional clearing. You know, so when you come to me and we work with the visualizations and emotional release, we are going into the cocoon and finding the true seed within you, right? We're trying to just clear the weeds energetically, but also emotionally, really. We're clearing the weeds so we can find your true self and your divine spark. It is not always pretty, but we both can promise you that you will feel more fulfilled because you find your divine spark.
And always, 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 people feel energized and powerful because for the first 40 years or 50 years or 60 years of their life, they've been pushing down that dark stuff, holding it back with the mask. Every single time I've been amazed, and they're amazed, when you throw the masks off, when you actually finally open up that closet and let the darkness come falling out, you free up so much energy that you've been using psychically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually to hold back the door. It's like this whoosh of energy that carries you into this work.
Exactly. I think what you're doing is we're finding the root causes, those unhealthy seeds that were planted from your family of origin, from the people you grew up with, from lineages that you've just been passed, things that have been passed down epigenetically and generationally. What we're doing is we are finding the root cause. you know, in how to remember who you are, you have to remember what has been handed down to you, to remember where the root cause comes from. So you can pull the roots out and heal them so you can then go on to this journey of returning.
Yeah, so it's remembering and it's returning. And I think you brought this quote by Thomas Merton, but I'm deep into Thomas Merton. Got to him really through Father Richard Rohr. I'm looking at Catholic mystics, especially around the Enneagram. And because it's all about shadow work and finding the energy in that, the shadows where we hide in the morning of life, we hide away our energy. And the afternoon is about taking back our power. And Thomas Merton says, this is where people break down. As soon as they reach the point where they can no longer see the way and guide themselves by their own light, they refuse to go any further. It is in the darkness that we find true freedom. It is in the abandonment that we are made strong. This is the night that empties us. And so we all need a guide, and finding a guide to take you into and through that darkness as a path of remembering and a path of returning back to your authentic self, your soul.
It's so true. And when you return, I really love this idea. Sue Monk Kidd brought in this idea of the idea that the opposite of courage isn't just fear, but it's also security. So returning to the truth of who you are, it takes a lot of faith and courage. And I think what Thomas Merton is saying also is that we as people, physical human beings, your mind can only go so far. When you return to who you are, it takes a leap of faith. It takes an idea that we're going to travel and journey into the soul of who we are. We need more than just us. Whether it's a guide outside of you, or I ultimately think that it's you put your hands in the trust of the divine or your high self, you know, whatever you call it, that there is more than just being, it's not about being fearful of doing it. It's also that we have strong beliefs and vows and promises that we have made to each other, to ourselves, especially over the years. What if we unraveled all those? We would, you know, I did this personally. I just felt like 3 weeks ago I went through another layer of it. It's layers of, you know, my belief is, you know, X, Y, and Z. What if I didn't live with this belief? Well, then I would have to completely let go and trust in the divine. And can you completely return to yourself? Because that is trusting in something greater than you, because it's hard to do it on your own. Would you agree?
Of course I agree. It's beautifully said. So it's remembering and it's returning and it's recommitting, right, is the final one. Recommitting to, you know, and the re's are great because it implies, right, over and over and over again. It doesn't just happen. And, you know, I don't believe in one-time epiphanies. Maybe they happen, but it wears off. And you need to constantly and continuously return to it, recommit to it, just like you would in an exercise or a nutritional path in life. You don't just run the marathon and then you're done. You recommit to training and to doing this work. And so thinking about this as the kind of final step.
Yeah, I mean, I think of recommitting as kind of what you said, a daily practice. But what is the daily practice? The daily practice is becoming silent and still. Thomas Merton said, we don't have to rush after it, basically whatever we want, right? It was there all the time. And if we give it time, it will make itself known to us. The morning of life, a lot of the morning of life, I don't want to make generalizations, a lot of it is about being in your divine masculine. And we all, and I've said this before, I'm sure you've heard of it, but divine masculine doesn't pertain to male gender. It's all of us. When we're in the morning of life, we are typically go-getters. We are a little lost and we just take action. And we don't wait because we're young and we're impatient. I think of our teenagers, my God. And then coming into silence and stillness is about recommitting to more of a silent waiting practice. You become the butterfly when you commit to know the seeds that are planted inside of your soul. It's a waiting period.
So sometimes it's a mindfulness meditation practice, but I just had a conversation with a client about the Hebrew word for patience is savlanut, which comes from the Hebrew word meaning to suffer. And sometimes it's just about holding the unknown as an act of mindfulness and meditation going through your day. It doesn't mean you sit in the lotus position. It means that you're patient and you hold the suffering, right, of not knowing, of wanting to act, but withholding the action because what got you here won't get you there. And you can't power through these afternoon of life issues like you did in the morning.
That's really where this trust of faith comes from. Can you sit in something that's really hard and difficult? Can you sit silently and wait patiently? Or rage if you need to, can you sit with the unknown and trust that you are in the womb of darkness, and that as you wait for these seeds to grow, you will come out of it. You know, the practice of committing is to wait and to heal from the wounds that are in the darkness inside of us. I think of, you know, I hate to bring it up too much, but when we lived in Israel, it was 3 years of waiting, right? We did not have any answers. We were literally like the Israelites in the desert.
Literally,
we were there and we understood what they went through. We suffered greatly and finally realized that the answer was to leave because we needed a different quality of life. But ultimately, it was a waiting practice. It really was. Or if you've seen someone die, you do not have a choice of when they pass on. It is a waiting period between them and their soul and the divine. So I think of this poet, a quote by this poet, Rainier Maria Wilke, and he says, "I beg you to be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart and to try and love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek answers which cannot be given you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing, live along some distant day into the answer."
So it's about remembering, right, who you are, your soul. It's about returning to that place of strength and power, and it's about recommitting to it every single day. And in the afternoon of life, it is not a chore. Carl Jung once said, the privilege of a lifetime is to become who you are. And it's a privilege, and it feels like a privilege. And that's the work that we're doing on this podcast, hopefully, and it's taking you into. And it's the work we do behind the scenes at Soul Centered. If you like this podcast, the Soul Centered podcast, and you want more of it, just give us a 5-star review on one of the now many sites we're on. We're on Stitcher and iTunes and Podbean and a few others. So we would love for you to not only give us a positive rating, but also to share it with others as we start to get our message out there. We offer discovery sessions. We work with clients one-on-one, individually and together, and we put together a program that's individualized and right for you. So give us a shout, and we would love to set some time for a complimentary discovery session to see how we might work best together. You can follow us on social media, all the usual stops, and you can sign up for our email list and get our, I think it's bi-monthly bulletin newsletter of what's happening at Soul Centered. I have a lot of great things going on, so check us out at mysoulcenter.org. Don't forget the mysoulcenter.org. And we will be back next week with another installment of the Soul Centered podcast. Until then, shalom, salam, namaste, and peace.
Namaste, everyone. Have a beautiful day.